And now,
my fellow citizens,
my fellow Americans,
allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is
Gabe Ramirez, live on 670 The Score and the Odyssey app.
Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen, it is Gabe Ramirez. Shout out Robbie Triano, man. Robbie T in the building, producing today. I will be hanging out with you guys until 8:30. Cubs start their series out west against the Giants. And pregame coverage begins at 8:30 tonight. Pat Hughes, Ron Coomer got the call. First pitch is going to be at 9:05. I know when you're looking at your apps and such, it says 8:45. But there's going to be a pregame ceremony that's going to cause the game to be pushed back just a bit. So if you're at home by then and maybe can't be in front of a TV because, you know, you're doing family time or the kids crying or whatever, just download the Odyssey app. And then you can, you know, kind of just listen to the game there. Make sure you do that. And, of course, you can always listen here on 670 The Score. But it is Gabe Ramirez hanging out with you guys. And, man, the Cubs had themselves a weekend. So I did pre and post game on Friday for the Cubs. I was here in studio. And it was tough. At first, I thought to myself, am I bad luck? Like, is it me? Am I the one that's causing the Cubs to lose because, you know, I'm a Sox fan at heart, you know? But I do it respectfully. I never mention anything of the sorts. And I actually try to do my best Zach Zaveman when I do pre and post. I try to say as buttoned up as possible. Zach sounds awesome. So I watched the first game and I think to myself, I say, you know, okay, Shota had a bad game. You know, the announcers were pointing out, you know, Zach and Ron that, you know, it was now the second time that they were seeing Shota. And Cubs were plus money in that game. It was just weird. And you felt like something was wrong there. And sure enough, the Cubs ended up losing a big one. But you knew they'd bounce back. Of course, Jameson Taillon gets to the bump on Saturday, working the top of the strike zone, playing well. Christopher Morel back in his stride. I pointed out in the Cubs pregame, we do a segment called Who's Hot, Who's Cold, brought to you by Plumbers 911. And I said who was cold was Christopher Morel. He'd gone 2 for his last 24, only had one RBI in that entire time. And I was hoping that he'd be able to get out of that slump. He went 1 for 4 on Friday. And then, of course, he gets back-to-back homers on Saturday and Sunday. Bombs. So I was glad to see that. Cubs take home that one. Then Sunday happens, and Javier Saw, for whatever reason, you know, just couldn't find the strike zone. Cutter wasn't necessarily working much. Cubs couldn't. The inconsistency continued to be there, you know, in the lineup. So to me, the cool part about Sunday, though, was Ryan Sandberg's statue. And I thought that was cool. I mean, to me, you talk about somebody that's like synonymous with your upbringing here in Chicago. You know, obviously, I'm a Sox fan, so I think of Ozzy and Frank. But during that time, Ryan Sandberg was on the other side of the city, you know, doing his thing. And so to me, I thought it was really cool to see his statue. I thought it was a beautiful statue. I thought they did a phenomenal job. I thought the crowd that showed up, the speech, everything as a whole was great. And I thought it was a moment that, I guess as a younger fan, it's cool to see now those guys getting the statues, right? Like Carlton Fisk, for me, that was a little bit before me. You get a statue, I don't really know, you know, can't really get excited about that. Ryan Sandberg gets one. Hey, you might catch me in Wrigley. Going ahead and checking that out. But I wasn't the only one that was excited for, you know, the statue unveiling and everything that it meant for Ryan. It was also a guy that you might know, Bob Costas. He was on earlier today with Mully and Haw. And one thing, it's just so cool to have Bob Costas here on 670 The Score. But to hear him tell a tale so vividly as if it happened yesterday is something that's beautiful. And that's why he is who he is. And he spoke initially on just his relationship with Ryan Sandberg and how it grew over the years.
You hit it exactly right. When I would see him subsequently in his career, because he was only 24 years old at that point, so I saw him during his playing days, but especially in all the years after that at Cooperstown, and I tried to go to Cooperstown each July if I could. And as soon as we crossed paths, even before the first word was spoken, we're both thinking the same thing. We're both thinking June 23rd, 1984, and that connects us. And Ryan called me a couple of months ago, asked me if I would be part of the ceremony. Of course, I said yes. And to the point you made earlier, you know, all of us, as we get older, we begin to think back on our lives. We confront our own mortality. But especially in Ryan's case, because he has a serious health issue going on, And, you know, there are some people who act as they think they should, and that's fine. But Ryne Sandberg really feels that connection and that gratitude for Cub fans. He feels it during, he felt it during his career, and he feels it now with all the messages he's receiving, messages of concern and support as he battles through his cancer diagnosis. Every single thing about yesterday was completely genuine. There were a bunch of grace notes, including his grandchildren, you know, pushing right down on the button that, that unveiled, that pulled the curtain back and unveiled the statue. And then upstairs, I was seated with Rhino in a suite, in the Ricketts suite upstairs. And a couple of times, he leaned over and acknowledged fans between innings. And he had a Cub hat, and at one point, he scaled it out into the crowd, and people scrambled for that precious souvenir. And then when he sang Take Me Out to the Ball Game, he wasn't in the booth, as most people do during that seventh inning stretch. He was up in the suite, surrounded by his family when he did that thing during the seventh inning stretch. I mean, there were just so many pitch-perfect moments yesterday, and it springs from the fact that he's not just a Hall of Fame player. He's a genuinely good guy, and people sense that.
And a lot of people were wanting him to be the head coach of the Chicago Cubs. That was Bob Costas talking with Mullion Hall earlier today. It's Gabe Ramirez here on 670 The Score. Just talking about the Ryne Sandberg statue, what it meant to him, what it meant to his family, what it meant to the city as a whole. And Bob Costas did just a great job just explaining it earlier this morning with the guys. And of course, you know, the connection between the two of them is because of the Sandberg game, June 23rd, 1984. You were alive. Shout out to you. You guys, you saw a great one, right? Cubs, Cardinals, Willie McGee hits for the cycle. Ryan hits two homers. Cubs are coming back several times over. Just a huge game, but obviously called by Bob Costas. And Mullion Hall asked them how big that Sandberg game was.
The game of the week was something else because it was the entire nation. And when you get the context of what the game of the week meant, the size of the audience, a perfect, beautiful Saturday at Wrigley Field. Not incidentally, the Cardinals as the opponent. And it wasn't just what Sandberg did, 5-for-6 with 7 RBIs in the game. But the game was so crazy. The Cubs are down 7-1. They're down 9-3. He ties it with the homer in the ninth off Suter. It shows you how the game has changed. Suter came in the seventh or at the latest the eighth. He pitched 3 innings. So
Bob Costas again talking about, you know, just Ryne Sandberg earlier today with Mullion Hall, and it was a big game. Bob Costas talks about how young he was at that moment. And of course, when you're older, called in the Olympics, or you're already established in your career, finding defining moments become more and more difficult. But when at the beginning of the year, you're calling games that people still talk about 40 years later, those are the ones that stand out the most. What did Bob Costas think about Sandberg's speech that he gave yesterday?
Yeah, it was just so heartfelt. And he was really not that outgoing with the press. He was always accommodating, but he wasn't that outgoing. He was just a nice all-American boy who was a really good baseball player. But he laid a lot out on that occasion. And think about it. If you're ever going to do it, that's the place.
Right.
You
know? Right.
If you don't do it then, when are you going to do it?
Yeah, talked a lot about stuff that was happening personally in his life. But again, the crowd was great, and everybody went inside assuming they were going to get themselves a victory for Rhino. Let's go, baby. Javier sat on a bump. Severino pitching. It's the Mets. Got to win the series. Feel good coming off a Saturday's win. But not necessarily the case. Again, the Assad yesterday, so it just didn't look right from the beginning. The cutter, just he was eating too much of the zone up. The cutter was just left over the plate a bit much. You saw the Nimmo homer. He had two homers in the series, just like Christopher Morel. But his homer was off the four-seam. Four-seam right at 91, top of the zone. It's just like sitting there like a meatball, puts it to the opposite field. Just, it's tough, man. But he struggled to find the strike zone again in the fifth. And then, what, J.D. Martinez is that lucky jump. It was just tough. Tough. I felt like, you know, Cubs had themselves an opportunity to do something. But, man, I'll tell you this, though. You know how they tell you to check in on your friends sometimes? Don't check in on a Cubs fan. Don't. Do not ask people. You know how typically, hey, how's it going? Hey, how about them Cubs? Don't do that. You talk to a Cubs fan right now, and they look so miserable. It's almost worse than Bears fans over the last couple of seasons, where it was doom and gloom. You just kind of knew they were going to lose, and it was miserable. Cubs fans, it's just like you stole their teddy bear, their favorite teddy bear from them, and they'd feel bad.
Do you think they're more miserable than Sox fans right now? Just because they know they were supposed to be good?
Yes, of course. Of course they are. A Sox fan like myself, I've strategically removed myself emotionally from the team over the last year and a half. I still follow them. I'm sick. I still watch every single game. It's on DVR, but so I go through it. But I want to see what's going on with Cannon. I want to see what's going on with Thorpe. I want to see what's going on, you know, with some of the younger guys, Garrett Crochet. So I watch the games, and those are, I don't expect to win. I'm just watching what's happening inside of the game, right? It's pure entertainment. Cubs fans, though, you got to remember, beginning of the season, it was confetti and balloons. It was, Papa, Greg Council, we've made it. We're going to the land of the Oz. And now you talk to them, and the Scarecrow people have come in and just pooped on them all, and they're just really upset right now. And I feel bad for them. I know what that's like as a Sox fan. I felt that, where there was anticipation of a good season. This just happened to the White Sox just a few years ago. And so I know what it's like to have that going into a season, and it fizzled out quickly. And it is unfortunate. But, hey, man, a lot of baseball left. And it's not like the Cubs play in the best division in baseball. So if Craig Council could do some brujeria on the team and, you know, whip up a little something, I don't know, to make it work, then hopefully that could happen. But that remains to be seen at this point. But, hey, you know, tonight, kick things off, get to the West Coast. Cubs are playing the Giants. Again, you could listen to that right here on 670 The Score. Pregame begins at 8:30. First pitch, 9:05. There's a ceremony happening. So it won't start at 8:45, as noted in a lot of the websites and such. But, again, you can download the Odyssey app and listen to that right here with us. All right. Coming up next, we get Steve Phillips, host of the Leadoff Spot on SiriusXM, also a former MLB GM. And I wonder, does the phrase "there's still a lot of baseball left" hold any water when it comes to Steve Phillips when he's talking about this Cubs team? We'll check his temperature and what he thinks about the Cubbies. We'll do that next. It's Gabe Ramirez right here on The Score.
Swanson not being held at first. The 0-2. Strike three called, and the ball game is over. The Mets win the game and win the series. The final tonight, 5-2 New York.
We're back live with more Gabe Ramirez on 670 The Score.
Can the Cubs get better? That is the question that we will ask our next guest. It is Gabe Ramirez here on 670 The Score. Patrick Wisdom striking out three straight pitches. I know Pete Crow Armstrong was pissed. It's like, why didn't I get the opportunity? I'm the young guy. You want to see what I could do? You sub me out? I understand it's Jake Diekman, but Jake Diekman, we just saw him pitching for the White Sox on the other side of town last year. But he did get him on three straight pitches. Diekman pitching extremely well this season. That we do know. But the question is, can the Cubs get better? And to answer that question, joining us on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline, download the Circa Sports app today. Of course, you could listen to him on the Leadoff Spot on MLB Radio on SiriusXM. He is a former MLB GM as well, and you guys know exactly who this guy is. No need for the big introduction. None other than Steve Phillips. Steve, welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it. Hold on a second. I'm just washing my hands. They're a little sticky right now. Yeah, just trying to wash off the stickiness on my hands.
Hey, no. Steve, there's nothing on there. Remember, there's nothing on there.
It's just a little rosin, a little dirt, a little sweat. Not a big deal. And I know I could palm a baseball, turn my hand upside down, it would still stick to my hand. But there's nothing on it. Good to be on with you. How are you?
I'm doing great. What a ninth inning. That was an interesting one after, you know, having a couple of pitches in there. But I didn't think it was going to get away from the Mets. I feel like, you know what the problem for me, Steve, is we asked the question of can the Cubs get better? It's the inconsistency of the guys in the Cubs lineup. They have talent there. We know they're talented. But the flashes of talent show up far too few and not often enough.
Yeah. You know, they don't have the aircraft carrier in the lineup. So everybody is kind of a blender offensive player instead of an impact offensive player. Now, they can become better and more impactful if there's somebody carrying the load. But they're just not doing it in the same way this year as they have before. And so, you know, Bellinger's been okay, but not great. And, you know, Happ and Suzuki are both good players, but, you know, there's just a lot of blenders in the lineup. And, you know, like you look at the teams like the Dodgers and the Yankees, where they've got these guys with, you know, 1,000 OPSs, and there are multiple guys like that, and guys that hit for average and hit for power and who don't strike out a lot. And the Cubs don't have that. You know, the Blue Jays don't have that. You know, there are other teams too that just don't have that centerpiece to the offense around which to build everybody else. And so everybody, you have to count on timing working out, that multiple guys lined up in the right spots in the lineup are going to produce at the same time and try to get the job done. And they're just not doing it consistently enough.
Yeah, the aircraft carrier. I like the way you put that, because it is true. And most people would assume, if you're talking to Cubs fans, that Cody Bellinger would have been that guy. I know you said that, you know, he's having a year that was similar to last year, but do you view him as someone that can carry the load for the Cubs?
You know what? I think that I look at him as being his best when there's somebody else who's great in the lineup.
Yeah.
That he doesn't have to be the guy to carry the load, but he's supported and protected, and it allows him to thrive and not have the pressure of always being the one to have to deliver. He gets into the mode of over-trying sometimes, and it expands the strike zone on him, where he feels like he has to produce and he has to get it done. You know, and I think that you know, one of the challenges for the Cubs is that they want to try to build some margin for error because the bullpen hasn't been great. And so, you know, when you don't have a great bullpen and you're not scoring a ton of runs, you have to score enough, just enough, sometimes you're giving those games up because your bullpen's not quite where it is. But, you know, they can add to this offense, and, you know, I think they could. It's fair to expect Swanson and Horner are going to be better and should be better. They could really use a first baseman. I like Bush, but I'd love to have him DH or play third. Although he's made some nice plays there, but add a Pete Alonso to the lineup, right? Add Alonso to that lineup. And I like Bush, and I want him in the lineup somewhere. But, you know, they've got a lot of pieces that can fit, but they don't all fit together right now. It's a little clumsy the way the roster is, right? If, you know, you know, where does Wisdom fit? Where's Morel fit? Where do they play defensively? If you're on a go for the offense, then you're struggling on the defensive side of it. And how do they all, you know, get in the lineup in a way that mixes and matches together? And, you know, it's a team built for a guy like Craig Counsell, who likes to work matchups, but I don't know that he has the right pieces yet to match up in all of the right situations. And if you get the aircraft carrier and that big guy in the lineup who's just your penciling in, he's going to be there every day, and you have Bellinger, and you have Suzuki, and then you can blend the other guys around him, I think it gives Counsell a better chance to work his magic.
Yeah, the guy in the middle of the lineup can elevate everyone's play, not only Cody's, but you're looking at him more like a Scotty, less of a Jordan. That makes sense to me. We're talking, we're talking to Steve Phillips here on 670 The Score. Gabe Ramirez hanging out with you guys. You were talking about, you know, having a lot of those guys in the middle of the lineup, and I understand it, because when you're looking at teams, it is like that sometimes. You don't necessarily have, you know, the best of the best, but you got good guys. But as a former GM, Steve, I mean, how difficult is it to move on from that talent, because you still believe in them, right? That's why you have them on the team. That's why you have them part of the 27. But ultimately, it's difficult to package some of those guys, choosing which ones you want to move on from in order to get that top-tier talent that you're talking about.
Yeah, so the reality is that I think you keep the guys at the major league level and you package the minor league talent together to get that guy. Because they have, I think, an assortment of nice blenders that would fit in a winning lineup. And yet they don't have that major threat, that presence, the guy who, you know, connects the front of the lineup to the back of the lineup, who drives in the runs and he gets on base, to where the guys behind him have traffic that they now can try to drive him in. And so, so I don't know that they have to package the major league talent to do it. You might be able to do it. You just have to make sure you're choosing the right ones, right? I mean, that's the bottom line, is that you have to give up something to get something. And sometimes you have to piece things together to get the one right fit. And you might give up more total RBIs to get the one guy who's going to drive in 100. But there is that real value in the one key player in the lineup. And I think that, you know, the question is, do they have the depth to add to the offense and add to the bullpen to try to, because their starting pitching should be good enough with the guys that they have. And, you know, I think Yamanaga obviously wasn't great the last time out. He'll bounce back. He's a veteran. But, you know, they're going to need to get offense and bullpen. And if they have to make a choice, I would settle. If you don't have enough to get the impact bat and the bullpen, I would actually settle for a good bat and a couple relievers. You know, I think that, you know, if that's where you have to make some choices, that you can't get everything you want, I'll take my chance with the blenders, but when we have a lead, we can't give it up.
Yeah, you got to get that back end settled out and figured out. The Cubs definitely have still some moves to make. That we do know. We know they're capable of it. They did it last year. They were trying everything they possibly could to get into the playoffs, making moves at the deadline, calling guys up from AAA. But I have a question for you, Steve. What was a move you made when you were a GM that was your favorite? Like, you look back at it and you're like, yeah, that was the best move that I made. Maybe it was getting more return than you probably expected, or maybe moving on from a player that, you know, you knew that you, at the peak when their value was the highest. What's something like that for you?
Yeah. We traded for Piazza, and that obviously was the big one for us. We were a good little team, but we needed that aircraft carrier. We needed that guy in the middle of the lineup. I remember one of my owners, Nelson Doubleday, said, you got a good little team here, but fans love stars in New York. And you know what? If you get a star, then you also get the performance of that guy and the marquee value of that guy. Now, that same owner, Nelson Doubleday, said, well, why don't you trade this guy, this guy, this guy, and this guy, and go get Ken Griffey Jr.? And I said, that's not really how the trades work. Where I take my seven worst guys, but I give them seven, they're still good, right, but they're not great, to get their one superstar. They're going to want, impact, at least in the future, in return to get them. And so, I think that those kinds of deals are few and far between when you get that major impact guy. You know, one year I traded for Kenny Rogers, and he was so good for us, starting down the stretch. And also, ate up innings, did a really good job. Now, in the postseason, he ended up walking in what was the winning run for the Braves against us. But I will tell you, we wouldn't have gotten there. He came in out of the bullpen, a normal starter, on a short rest to come in and try to do it. And, I didn't blame him for anything. We wouldn't have gotten there without him. And even with that, the bigger story was that at the time we were losing on the field. Ricky Henderson and Bobby Bonilla were playing cards in the clubhouse while we're, losing to the Braves in the championship series. And so, that became the big story anyway. So people kind of cut a break to Kenny Rogers at the time.
That's hilarious. But, those are the moves that you have to make, right? You have to make certain moves, and some hit, some don't.
You know what, guys? I mean, here's the thing. I traded prospects to get major league talent. And I don't think I ever got burned by it. I mean, we gave up good players to get Piazza, but the way I looked at it was none of them are going to be Piazza in the end. They could be really good. They could be all-stars. And Preston Wilson was an all-star. He's a really good player. But the time value of talent, of getting the talent today versus waiting for the talent 2 years, 3 years down the road, has real value. And, I don't know what's going to happen 2 years, 3 years down the road. I don't know what's going to happen next year. Ask the Houston Astros about that, the Texas Rangers about that, and the Arizona Diamondbacks about that, all of whom were really good last year. But what's happening this year?
Yep.
The Braves aren't quite the same team they were a year ago. And so, I look at it and think that if you got a chance to go for it, there is some thought that prospects get general managers fired. That, you can keep holding on to that prospect and waiting for him to be that superstar player for you. And the next thing you know, 3 years down the road, he's not really, blossomed, and you're out of a job because you didn't trade him because you thought, oh, I'm going to hold on to this young superstar. And so, look, you have to know the right guys to trade and the right guys to keep. But I never hesitated to trade prospects because I believe that in the draft and in the international market, we would get out there and we'd replenish our farm system. If at some point you weren't having a good year, you trade away players, you bring in more prospects. And those are players that, I always looked at it. The draft was me bringing in players that I'd be able to trade to get major league ready talent in return and hope that somebody would blossom. And look, David Wright did and Jose Reyes did and had those great careers with the Mets. But there were other guys we traded away. And we did it in order to try to make the playoffs in back-to-back years and go to the World Series like we did.
Major league talent, right? That's what's going to get you there. That's what's going to have you lifting up the trophies at the end of the season. And if you can get it when your team is in that window, that's when it's valuable. That's when it's the most important. And like you said, that's when the fan base is going to be more on board. But you talked a lot about trading. But, you know, when it comes to free agency, a lot of people were down on the Cubs for not adding top-tier talent via free agency. Do you feel like the Cubs missed out on a couple of opportunities to, like you said, get that aircraft carrier and maybe as opposed to trying to get it via trade? Do you think that's the route they should have taken?
Well, you know, I mean, I think that, you know, they got Imanaga, which was a real value and relative to Yamamoto's deal. They got it. It was a really good signing on their part. They were able to bring Bellinger back at their price and not having to chase the market. You know, where Scott Boras wanted it to go to certain levels. And I think he scared everybody away to where Bellinger sort of had to settle. And I thought they played that very well. You know, Ohtani's the one that everybody wanted. And in the end, the way that deal was structured, everybody should have gotten in on it because of the way the money that he generates himself and the production that he brings in the line. If you talk about a guy adding to the value of the hitters around him, I mean, there's not really anybody like him that is doing that. I think that it's interesting because everybody thought when Craig Counsell got hired that meant they were going to spend money, when in reality, Craig Counsell, you hire him and pay him so that you don't necessarily have to go get the superstar. Right. And he's a guy that works his magic, you know, in the margins. And he's always been able to do that. But, you know, he had Yelich and he had, you know, he did have some star power. And, oh, by the way, you know, he had Corbin Burns, Brandon Woodruff, and Freddie Peralta. You know, he had three aces in his rotation. And he always had a great bullpen with Hader and Devin Williams and then just Devin Williams. And so, you know, it's like Moneyball. You know, the book is about on base percentage, but the reason those Oakland A's teams won wasn't because their hitters got on base. It was because their pitchers didn't let anybody on base. Mm. Right. And so, you know, that was, you know, so star power is great. And I think that the Cubs starting pitching, you know, I mean, Steele's had an unfortunate year with the early injury, but we know that he's a quality starting pitcher. And Imanaga is a legitimate guy. Tyone's throwing the ball well. And so, you know, they have enough starting pitching to be good, but they've got to get more consistent. You know, you have to score enough to win, and they don't have an offense yet that's scoring enough. And then, you know, if you're going to score just enough, you better have a strong bullpen. And I think it was pretty clear right from the start that they didn't have quite enough at the end of the game.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. Steve, talking to Steve Phillips here on 670 Score, Gabe Ramirez with you, talking about top of the rotation pitching that is locked down. On the other side of the city, I'm a big Sox fan. You know, a guy like Garrett Crochet, they're saying people are making phone calls about him. Steve, who do you think has the most trade value between a guy like Garrett Crochet or Luis Robert Jr.?
Interesting. I think probably Crochet in that Luis Robert Jr.'s health status is always a question mark, right? He's been hurt so much. And I think it in some ways, even if he's playing healthy, playing great, you know, the teams that are out there saying, yeah, but if I trade for him and he pulls his hamstring, then what? Now, I think the other thing for Crochet that would be a legitimate concern for me is, you know, you're entering uncharted territories with innings pitched right now. And so I'm going to trade for him for the last 2 months of the season where he's never pitched as a starter in the last 2 months of the season. And at what point does he run out of gas and do I have to protect him? Or can I pitch him? And you know, if I'm going to trade for him, sure, I'd like to get the years of control beyond this year, but I need to get something from him down the stretch. And so, you know, it's one of those ones that it's a little difficult to know. How do you manage him if you trade for him? And understanding that you don't want him to get hurt, you don't want him to break down, you don't want him to diminish, but you also have to get something out of him if you're going to give up something. So, you know, they're both a little complicated, Luis Robert and Crochet. But I do think Crochet probably has the greater value. And here's the thing. Right now, there are 25 buyers and 5 sellers in the market. It is going to be a seller's market like we've never seen. You know, we've got 13 teams in the National League within a game or 2 games of a playoff spot. And so everybody believes they're in, especially because last year in the World Series, we had 2 wild card teams.
Yeah.
And the Rangers and the Diamondbacks. And owners are out there saying, get us to the wild card, because if we do, we got a shot. It's not who's the best team. It's just the team who plays the best and gets hot in the tournament at the end of the year. And so, you know, there will be some teams that look like they're within striking distance and they'll sell, you know, or they just won't buy. But for the most part, you've got a heck of a lot more buyers than sellers right now, and the price tag is going to be pretty significant.
I got to be honest. I hope that Chris Getz doesn't take any phone calls about Garrett Crochet. I would love to see him on the South Side for a couple of more years, at least a couple more years.
Here's the thing, though, right? Are they going to win in 3 years? Are they going to be a winning team? And the answer is no. It's going to take longer than
Steve,
that.
Steve, don't break my heart like that. What are you?
No, they're just not going to. They've got no chance of being a playoff team over the next 3 years. And so why hold them and pitch him, and then he ends up getting hurt? You get nothing in the end, where right now you've got the premium value for him to truly go through. Look, it's going to be painful, but the Orioles did it. The Astros did it. The Royals did it. The Cubs did it. And I think it's just the price you pay to get your teeth kicked in for a while to fortify your farm system. And it makes it a little bit more difficult because, you know, worst record in baseball doesn't necessarily get you the first pick in the draft. And like it used to, because of what they've done with the lottery on it. And so it is a little bit different, but it's still the right thing to do is trade everybody if you're the White Sox.
Yeah, get it done. All right, Steve, last question before I get you out of here. You know, next week, Monday, is Bobby Bonilla Day. Does he, like, call you and sell you, like, a couple $100 or something like that every year or what?
Yeah, no, he was saying, no, let me tell you something. The dude has never gotten me a Christmas card.
Oh,
he's never sent me a birthday gift. I've got nothing. I turned his $6 million into $29+ million. And I have gotten nothing from Bobby. And, you know, one time my co-host on MLB Network Radio, Eduardo Perez, got Bobby Bo to call in on my birthday to wish me a happy birthday. And I'm like, dude, where's the gift?
Yeah,
exactly. Because he is the gift that keeps on giving, because every July 1st, every radio show across the country wants to talk about Bobby Bonilla Day. My phone's ringing off the hook. Everybody wants to ask me questions about it. And you know what? I should get something out of this from somebody.
Something. There's got to be a Steve Phillips Day that Bobby celebrates, you know? Hey, Steve, I appreciate you jumping on, man. Loved having you on. Great insight. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
You bet. My pleasure. Thanks.
Steve Phillips, host of the Leadoff Spot on MLB Radio and Sirius XM. Of course, former MLB GM. That's why he was able to give us such great insight. And that was amazing stuff right there. Hope Tanny uses that somehow on Bobby Bonilla Day. That's what I hope him right there. All right, so this is what I got for you. For sticking around and hanging out with us today, I have one pair of general admission wristbands to NASCAR's street race events happening Saturday, July 6th only, though. That's when this wristband is. So it's going to be one pair given away every Monday through Friday. So make sure you guys check that out. Here's the number you need to call, though. It's not like the call-in line. It's something different. 312-540-0670. You can pick that up. Check that out. 312-540-0670. All right. We're going to take caller Robbie, what are we doing? What number? What number are we taking? Six. Caller number six is going to get that wristband, general admission, July 6th, NASCAR street race. You're going to get that right now when you call in. Again, 312-540-0670. Call that number right now, and we'll get that for you. And then when we come back, did you see who threw back the home run ball at Wrigley over the weekend? Somebody you would never expect. I'll tell you who it was right after the break. It's Gabe Ramirez here on 670 The Score.
The 2-1. Alvarez cracks one in the air, deep left center field. This is long gone into the bleachers for a home run. Alvarez is second in as many days. And it's now 6-1 as the Mets get on the board. Cubs with the lead here in the fifth.
We're back live with more Gabe Ramirez on 670 The Score.
Zach Xavier with a phenomenal call right there. Cubs dropped that game 8-1 on Saturday, but it's who caught the home run ball and what he did with it that is the story. We'll discuss that in just a second. Again, Gabe Ramirez hanging out with you. Do not forget, starting Wednesday at 6 o'clock, The Score is going to have an NBA draft special hosted by Mark Grody and Bulls radio voice Chuck Swirsky. They're going to be live from the Advocate Center talking Bulls offseason and getting ready for the Bulls to make their pick at 11th overall. That's tomorrow night at 6 p.m. No, that's Wednesday at 6 p.m. On The Score and the free Odyssey app. Speaking of the Bulls, I'm going to have Will Perdue on at 7:20. We're going to be talking about the Bulls and how big a number 11 pick Like, how big of an impact can a number 11 pick make on this roster in particular? We'll talk about that and a bunch of Zach LaVine stuff as well. But again, so Francisco Alvarez hits the home run. It goes into the bleachers, and the guy stands up, and he ends up throwing the ball back. No big deal. That's what happens at Wrigley. That's what you do. Unless, you know, you don't buy into the whole thing and you keep it. For those of you that have never been and don't know, that's what you do with opposing teams' home run balls. The issue, though, was that the fan that caught the ball was decked out in Mets gear. Mets hat, Mets t-shirt. And it wasn't as though, like, they punked him into doing it, because it was very much on time with how a ball that would be thrown back into the outfield would look. You'd catch, you'd cheer, they'd say, throw it back, you throw it back. That's the timing of it. Zero hesitation whatsoever. I guess the question I have for you, I'd love for you to text it in. 312-644-6767. If you were going to watch either the Cubs or the Sox at an opposing team stadium, and their thing was to throw the opposing team back, ball back, would you do it? It seemed odd to me. Now, like I said, buddies, and you can call in too. I'll take a phone call right here before I go to break. 312-644-6767. The buddy was tall, so again, it's not like they punked him, but then when the camera came back on him, he very much just looked like a really nice guy that understood the rules of the bleachers. Like, maybe he, like, I wish we could talk to him, but he struck me as a guy that, like, maybe lived in Chicago, was from New York, but he's from Queens, so he throws it back. You know what I'm saying? It's not, or not, is that what it is? Where do Mets play? Queens, right?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, they play in Queens. So he's from Queens, so he's a little nicer. Yeah, he's not like a Bronx guy. So he throws it back. But I feel like he lives in Chicago. He grew up in New York, but he's been here long enough that he understands the rules. And he threw it back and he was like, ah, whatever.
I feel like someone whispered to him, like, I'm going to beat you
up.
There's
nobody around him. There was no one around him.
Okay, then
he's literally by himself. Like, there's even space around him. Like, yeah, who are you with? It looked weird. But again, when they went back on him, he just looked so innocent and like, you look like you, Robbie. You look like a nice guy.
Oh, thanks.
You look like you follow the rules, you know?
I try.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
I try my best.
He looked like a rule follower. Let me tell you something. I've watched the White Sox at a couple of stadiums now. Like, I went to KC. I went to Fenway. Let's say I was at Fenway. First of all, the outfield seats in Fenway suck. They're so small. They're so tiny. Yes, they're still the old ones. If I caught a home run out there, if La Pantera hit a bomba and I was fortunate enough to have it in my hands, you'd be out your damn mind if you think I'm going to throw that ball back. Out of your mind. There is no amount of pressure that would get to me to make me throw that ball back. Zero. So that's what I'm saying. I don't know. Texts are coming in and they're saying maybe he lost a bet. Was he faded? Was he drunk? Let me tell you something. I'm sobering up real quick if I catch a home run ball. Okay? Pero I'm talking about rapidito. Like, it's going to be like this. Because I'm going to be talking to everybody. I want to pull out my phone. I'm going to be on social media. I just caught a home run ball at an opposing team's feet. You know what I'm saying? And I would make a bid. Like, if they were like, throw it back, I'd take out my phone. I'd be like, bro, F you. Like, I would do. Anyway.
Well, here's the real question. So I understand you won't throw it back, but let's say there's a kid sitting right next to you, you know? Are you giving that kid the ball?
Is he wearing a Sox jersey?
Yes.
Yeah. His ass better not throw it back, though, because then me and his dad are going to have a problem. That's all I'll say.
So at least you have standards. Like, yeah, for me, yeah. I would have to contemplate giving that kid the ball, because, you know, my whole life I wanted that ball.
Oh, see, I've caught a home run ball before. I've caught A.J. Przinsky's home run ball once.
As a regular fan. Yeah.
As a flex. And it was, I tell this story often, it was the last homer he hit during a year where he had hit the most homers in his career. So I hit that. I caught that ball and he traded it for another baseball. I need something else. I need a bat or something. I'm gonna get at AJ one day. All right. We're going to take a break. Hopefully you Cubs fans, or I just think Chicagoans in general, will never do that. You're better than that. So please don't. When we come back, as mentioned, Will Perdue is going to be hanging out with us at 7:20. So a lot of things to talk about there. But You know, there's a big game tonight coming up in a little bit. Game 7, Stanley Cup Finals, Panthers, Oilers. Would this be the biggest fail ever when it comes to the NBA, or when it comes to the finals? We will discuss a couple of other failings that have happened, including the Falcons and the Patriots. Yeah, I got a couple more in my back pocket. We'll talk about that on the other side. Don't go anywhere. It's Gabe Ramirez right here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
The 2-1. Alvarez cracks one in the air, deep left center field. This is long gone into the bleachers for a home run. Alvarez is second in as many days. And it's now 6-1 as the Mets get on the board. Cubs with the lead here in the fifth.
We're back live with more Gabe Ramirez on 670 The Score.
Zach Xavier with a phenomenal call right there. Cubs dropped that game 8-1 on Saturday, but it's who caught the home run ball and what he did with it that is the story. We'll discuss that in just a second. Again, Gabe Ramirez hanging out with you. Do not forget, starting Wednesday at 6 o'clock, The Score is going to have an NBA draft special hosted by Mark Grody and Bulls radio voice Chuck Swirsky. They're going to be live from the Advocate Center talking Bulls offseason and getting ready for the Bulls to make their pick at 11th overall. That's tomorrow night at 6 p.m. No, that's Wednesday at 6 p.m. On The Score and the free Odyssey app. Speaking of the Bulls, I'm going to have Will Perdue on at 7:20. We're going to be talking about the Bulls and how big a number 11 pick, like how big of an impact can a number 11 pick make on this roster in particular. We'll talk about that and a bunch of Zach LaVine stuff as well. But again, so Francisco Alvarez hits the home run. It goes into the bleachers and the guy stands up and he ends up throwing the ball back. No big deal. That's what happens at Wrigley. That's what you do. Unless, you know, you don't buy into the whole thing and you keep it. For those of you that have never been and don't know, that's what you do with opposing teams' home run balls. The issue, though, was that the fan that caught the ball was decked out in Mets gear. Mets hat, Mets t-shirt. And it wasn't as though, like, they punked him into doing it, because it was very much on time with how a ball that would be thrown back into the outfield would look. You'd catch, you'd cheer, they'd say throw it back, you throw it back. That's the timing of it. Zero hesitation whatsoever. I guess the question I have for you, I'd love for you to text it in. 312-644-6767. If you were going to watch either the Cubs or the Sox at an opposing team stadium and their thing was to throw the opposing team back, ball back, would you do it? It seemed odd to me. Now, like I said, buddies, and you can call in too. I'll take a phone call right here before I go to break. 312-644-6767. The buddy was tall, so again, it's not like they punked him. But then when the camera came back on him, he very much just looked like a really nice guy that understood the rules of the bleachers. Like maybe he, like I wish we could talk to him. But he struck me as a guy that like maybe lived in Chicago, was from New York. But he's from Queens, so he throws it back. Yeah, you know, I think it's not, or not, is that what it is? Where do Mets play? Queens, right?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, yeah, they play in Queens. So he's from Queens, so he's a little nicer. Yeah, he's not like a Bronx guy. So he throws it back. But I feel like he lives in Chicago. He grew up in New York, but he's been here long enough that he understands the rules. And he threw it back and he was like, ah, whatever.
I feel like someone whispered to him, like, I'm going to beat you
up.
There
nobody around him. There was no one around him.
Okay, then
he's literally by himself. Like, there's even space around him. Like, yeah, who are you with? It looked weird. But again, when they went back on him, he just looked so innocent and like, you look like you, Robbie. You look like a nice guy.
Oh, thanks.
You look like you follow the rules, you know?
I try.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
I try my best.
He looked like a rule follower. Let me tell you something. I've watched the White Sox at a couple of stadiums now. Like, I went to KC. I went to Fenway. Let's say I was at Fenway. First of all, the outfield seats in Fenway suck. They're so small. They're so tiny. Yes, they're still the old ones. If I caught a home run out there, if La Pantera hit a bomba and I was fortunate enough to have it in my hands, you'd be out your damn mind if you think I'm going to throw that ball back. out of your mind. There is no amount of pressure that would get to me to make me throw that ball back. Zero. So that's what I'm saying. I don't know. Texts are coming in and they're saying maybe he lost a bet. Was he faded? Was he drunk? Let me tell you something. I'm sobering up real quick if I catch a home run ball. Okay? Pero I'm talking about rapidito. Like, it's going to be like this. Because I'm going to be talking to everybody. I want to pull out my phone. I'm going to be on social media. I just caught a home run ball at an opposing team's feet. You know what I'm saying? And I would make a bid. Like, if they were like, throw it back, I'd take out my phone. I'd be like, bro, F you. Like, I would do. Anyway.
Well, here's the real question. Would you? So I understand you won't throw it back, but let's say there's a kid sitting right next to you, you know? Are you giving that kid the ball?
Is he wearing a Sox jersey?
Yes.
Yeah. His ass better not throw it back, though, because then me and his dad are going to have a problem. That's all I'll say.
So at least you have standards. Like, yeah, for me, yeah. I would have to contemplate giving that kid the ball because, you know, my whole life I wanted that ball.
Oh, see, I've caught a home run ball before. I've caught A.J. Pierzynski's home run ball once.
As a regular fan. Yeah.
As a flex. And it was, I tell this story often, it was the last homer he hit during a year where he had hit the most homers in his career. So I hit that. I caught that ball and he traded it for another baseball. I need something else. I need a bat or something. I'm gonna get at AJ one day. All right, we're going to take a break. Hopefully you Cubs fans, or I just think Chicagoans in general would never do that. You're better than that, so please don't. When we come back, as mentioned, Will Perdue is going to be hanging out with us at 7:20. So a lot of things to talk about there. But, you know, there's a big game tonight coming up in a little bit. Game 7, Stanley Cup Finals, Panthers, Oilers. Would this be the biggest fail ever? When it comes to the NBA, or when it comes to the finals, we will discuss a couple of other failings that have happened, including the Falcons and the Patriots. Yeah, I got a couple more in my back pocket. We'll talk about that on the other side. Don't go anywhere. It's Gabe Ramirez right here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.